Inigo's 13th Dream. The Chamber of Records was three levels down beneath the spiral tower which housed the headquarters of Macathran's Weapons Guild. In total, the third level had 20 chambers, arranged in a circle and reached by a single ring corridor. They were used as vaults for the most secret guns and ammunition compounds known to the guild's masters. For centuries, the triple iron doors to each chamber had kept the rapid-fire guns safe, along with long-barreled pistols and other firearms lost to the rest of Quirinthia. The mechanisms to produce such devices were also kept in the vaults, as were the raw ingots of specialist metals the designs required. Just to gain entrance to the spiral tower was difficult enough. There was only one entrance, and it was heavily guarded. All visitors had to be accompanied by a master. Beyond that, armed guards kept a ceaseless vigil on the first and second basement levels. There were also ingenious trips and traps along the corridors and steps to catch anyone using concealment. It was reasonable, therefore, for those who assembled in the Chamber of Records, 2 days after Topar's little expedition left Macathran, to exude a degree of security. Grandmaster Owen greeted his 11 guests warmly. No one made any attempt to hide their sense of trepidation and excitement as they made their way into the broad, cross-vaulted chamber. There was a simple wooden table set up in the middle, with 13 chairs around it. Tall shelving cabinets were arrayed round the lead-grey walls, containing hundreds of leather folders which held every pistol and bullet design produced by the guild over its 2 millennia existence. Long teardrop lighting patterns stretched across the curving ceiling, glowing passively. Bice was the last to be shown in. He smiled round at his fellows as the three thick, heavy doors swung shut behind him. Complicated locks rotated, pushing steel bolts into place and securing them. Combination bands were spun.
"My poor boy,"
Mistress Florel said, and embraced Sampalok's ex-master warmly. "Welcome home."
"Thank you, Grandmama."
"Did you get the food I had sent out to you? I had the bakery on Jodsell Street make those raspberry muffins especially. I know how much you liked them as a boy."
"Yes, indeed. It was most kind."
"Was exile so terrible?"
"It had its moments."
"It had its costs," Tanal said. "Half of your family stayed at my lodge."
"For which you will be fully recompensed," Owen said smoothly. "Come, come. We are not here to squabble among ourselves over a little coinage.
Our moment draws near."
"It was drawing near 2 years ago," Bice said. "Then he arrived. Well, the Water Walker is off running round the countryside now, trying to find bandits," Boate said. "And when he does, he won't be coming back."
"Don't be too sure," Owen said. "His telekinesis is incredibly strong. Macathran hasn't seen the like since the days of Ra. And not even Ra could alter the city buildings."
Bice glowered at the reminder.
"Careful, cousin," Tanal said. "You tread close to heresy."
"I state the simple truth."
"You don't seriously believe he can ward off the reception I have arranged for him?" Duarte asked. "The whole point of ambushing him outside the crystal wall is to rob him of the advantage which the city gives him."
"The outcome is almost irrelevant," Owen said. "Even if he does survive, there will be nothing for him to return to. We must be absolute in that. Our supporters are ready."
"There will be resistance," Buate warned.
"Lady, take them," Tanal said. "I say we don't wait any—"
The Water Walker rose smoothly through the floor of the records chamber, his black cloak enveloping him like an extinguished nebula. He studied each one of the conspirators sitting around the table. Several had risen to their feet, hands reaching for their pistols, a motion which died as he gave them a lofty, dismissive smile. "The election has given us a mayor and a full council," the Water Walker said. "There will be no change, no revolution. We are not one nation until we choose to be so."
"What are you proposing?" Owen asked.
"I am proposing nothing. Your time is over." "This time, maybe," Bice snarled. "But there will be other opportunities."
"No, there won't," the Water Walker told him. "I've already seen what happens if you win."
Owen frowned at the strange claim.
Uneasy thoughts were stirring beneath his normally resolute shield.
"You cannot arrest us," Mistress Florell said. "Our kind are not accountable in common law courts, and we have many allies in the Upper Council where you would need to enact judgment."
"Quite right," the Water Walker agreed. "It would be pointless." Tanal strode across the chamber, his third hand reaching out. The big lock on the inner door turned sharply, its intricate combination bands spinning round until the bolts were freed. They withdrew, and the door swung open. There were several sharp breaths. The door opened onto a smooth grey section of grey wall. There was no way out of the chamber.
"I have heard many times from your followers that I am weak," the Water Walker said, "that I lack resolution. If you believe that, you don't know me at all. This revolution will end here, now. Without you, it cannot happen. Without the rapid-fire guns, it cannot be attempted ever again. Macathran will remain a democracy." His cloak parted, and he held an arm out, palm down. A rapid-fire gun slipped up through the floor and rose into his hand. He closed his fingers around it.
"No," Owen said. "This is against everything you stand for."
"You really shouldn't believe everything a heartbroken teenage girl tells you."
Owen grimaced as his fear began to manifest.
"You wouldn't dare," Mistress Florell said. "My family will not permit this."
"It is my family now," Ediard told her calmly. 11
third hands pushed and hammered against the Water Walker's shield, trying to find a weakness, a way through. Long shouts for help were hurled at the impermeable chamber walls.
"For all of my life I have known that sometimes, to do what's right, you first have to do what's wrong," the Water Walker told them. "Now I realize the truth of it. That is what I am."
His finger squeezed down on the trigger. He held it there until the magazine was empty. Storage Vault 5 contained over 300 rapid-fire guns. They were wrapped in oiled cloth, sitting on racks that formed neat ranks across the floor. Ediard replaced the one he'd used on its rack. He asked the city to dispose of them all. The floor beneath the racks changed, becoming porous, and the dreadful weapon sank down to oblivion. His farsight swept out, examining the other vaults. Storage Vault 8 contained the bullets used by the rapid-fire guns. The city quietly absorbed the crates. Vault 2 had the long-barreled pistols. 17 housed some huge guns, their barrels as big as his legs, mounted on little wheeled trolleys. Iron balls larger than his fist were stacked in pyramids beside them. The bullets, he realized. He shuddered as he imagined the damage they could cause. All sank away. Finally, the shelving cabinets in the Chamber of Records slid beneath the solid floor. The secret power of the Weapons Guild was no more. There would never be an internal threat to Macathran's Grand Council and Mayor again. Apart from the elections, and the guild quarrels, and the merchants maneuvering and bribing for gain, and the Grand Family struggling for advantage. He grinned at the thought of it all, that crazy, wondrous life lived by Macathran's citizens. It's all Finnerton's problem now. The warm afternoon light lit up the white pillars that lined Golden Park. Even the last bloom on the bushes and vines glowed with an exotic splendor in celebration of what had been an exceptionally pleasant summer. Ediard walked for some way across its elegant paths, drawing his thoughts together, resolving to do what he must. It was hard for his farsight to search out the frail souls of his parents. He stood beside one of the pillars along the Champ Canal side of Golden Park, bathed in the rich light reflected off the metal, extending his ability to its utmost. They were there, a few feet away, watching him as always.
"Thank you," he told them.
"You can see us?" his mother asked in surprise.
"Yes, mother, I can see you now."
"My son."
"Father, you've taken such care of me, more than I ever deserved."
"What were we supposed to do? You are all that remains of us."
"Not anymore. I have a wife now. We will have children. They will have more. Everything you are will go on through them."
"We should watch for them," his mother said. She sounded uncertain.
"No, Ediard said. It is time for you to let go. I can take care of myself now, more than you know. The price you have paid for watching me is too high. You cannot do this anymore. You must go to the heart. There is still time. There is always time.
Oh, Ediard.
Here. He held out a hand. His mother reached out, touching his fingertips. He fought against wincing as the debilitating cold burned him. Instead, he smiled in reverence as she took substance before him. Goodbye, mother, he said, and brushed his lips to hers. We will be together in the heart one day. I promise. Her sorrow and regret were dreadfully poignant, but she smiled as she withdrew from his touch. His father held her closely. Journey well, Ediard told them. He watched them fade up into the warm, clear blue sky, refusing to acknowledge any remorse. A lot of people were using Golden Park that afternoon, taking advantage of the lingering summer. Children raced over the grassy areas, playing elaborate games of catch. Apprentices bunking off duties gathered in the shade of the park's huge matos trees, sharing bottles of beer and gossip about their masters. Salrana walked along one of the crushed slate paths, enjoying the activity. Lads eyed her wishfully, although her crisp blue and white novice robes proved too great a barrier for any casual attempt to attract her attention. She crossed the ginger sandstone bridge into Isidro. Right ahead of her was the Blue Fox Tavern, a circular three-story building with a strange hexagonal rustication pattern embossed on the coppery wall. Its slim lancet windows made it seem taller than it actually was. She hesitated for a moment before slipping in through one of the smaller side doors. Something swirled on the periphery of her farsight, as if a pillar of fog had gusted down the alleyway. She frowned, but it didn't resolve in her senses, so she scurried up the stairs to the third floor. The Blue Fox was favored by grand family members as a place to conduct their liaisons. The exceptionally thick walls of the rooms eliminated the need to maintain a seclusion haze. Privacy was guaranteed against all but the most exceptional psychics. Salrana used the key she'd been given to unlock the door of a reserved room. Sunlight was diffused by the tinted gauze covering the windows. More fabrics were draped over the walls. Candles flickered on the dresser, giving off a thick, musky scent. The big bed was strewn with silk sheets and fur blankets. Salrana's lover was waiting for her beside the bed. Flushed with anticipation, Salrana removed her novice robe to show off the delicate lace camisole she wore underneath, a recent gift from her lover. That same lover drew her close and kissed her. Gentle hands undid the topmost bow on the camisole. Another kiss was given. The next bow was undone. More kisses, each one more intimate. The camisole fell open at the front. A whimper of excitement sounded deep in Salrana's throat. She couldn't contain herself any further, and clung to her lover, returning the kisses fiercely. Ediard discarded his concealment. Salrana jumped in shock. Her mind radiated guilt. You, Ediard said sourly. I should have guessed. I really should.
But you didn't, did you?
Ranelagh said disdainfully. She pulled her own satin negligee up and combed some of her disheveled hair back into place.
I thought you had left the city.
Yes, a lot of people made that mistake. Your friends, your family, your fellow conspirators. Ranelagh's eyes widened. Surprise shone there at first. Then she became alarmed as her directed long talk questions went unanswered.
What have you done? She hissed.
They won't answer you. Not now. Not ever.
Father?
She gasped. The lady will bless his soul, I'm sure. I doubt anyone else will.
Bastard!
Ranelagh was trembling on the verge of tears. You were planning worse for me. Far worse. Ranelagh recovered to glare at him defiantly.
So what do you plan for me?
Nothing. Because you are nothing without Owen and your family. Owner of a bordello. What is that? Not anything. Salrana took a hesitant step forwards.
Ediard?
Not a word from you. I don't blame you. Do you know what they did to your mind? what this vixen can do. Even as he spoke, he could sense the difference in Salrana's unshielded thoughts, the harshness that flowed where once there had only been contentment and geniality.
Of course she does,
Ranelagh gloated. Her arm went protectively round Salrana, who leant in closer, seeking reassurance. I showed her a real life. They used your anger with me for abandoning you. This agent of Honius came for you when you were vulnerable. It was no accident she met you. It was not chance. I know what she's like, Salrana. She has a perverted skill that can twist your very thoughts. She warps what should be something beautiful into something diseased. It's not love you feel for her. It is a wretched corruption of the affection your true self can experience.
No,
Salrana interrupted with soft insistence. It was I who found Ranelagh. They exploited you, her, Owen, the rest. Their only interest is in your past, our background. Lady, you're just another weapon to use against me. You're supposed to lure me out of the city if the ambush failed. Remember? Salrana gave Ranelagh a startled look, then faced Ediard again. I wouldn't have done it.
Ha!
Ediard closed his eyes to mute the pain seeing her like this brought him. You would. Please, Salrana, I can help you. There are others who can show you how they abused your thoughts, how this evil whore bewitched you.
So you can do what?
Salrana snapped, suddenly angry. Take Ranelagh from me? Leave me with nothing again?
That's not... I am myself.
They were going to breed you. In the lady's name, you know that's not right.
Your strength made you the water walker, Ranelagh said. Your power attracted Christabel to you, and now you are part of a grand family. You have their wealth and estate at your disposal. Your children will be born to a privilege no one in your pitiful Ashwell could ever comprehend. Why can't Salrana have children that are strong? Why can't Salrana have children who will enjoy that same cushion of money?
But you're not giving her that, Ediard said furiously. You exploited how vulnerable she was. You turned her away from everything she was.
I showed her what Macathran society could offer her once you'd tired of her,
Ranelagh said triumphantly.
Marriage, children, family, those are our customs, customs started by Ra himself. Our arrangements are practical and beneficial, deceiving no one. Who in Honius are you to judge that?
Ediard nearly struck her, but to do that would be to grant her victory. I will not give up on you, he told Salrana. What she has done to you is wrong and evil, and whenever the day comes that you realize that, I will be there for you. I swear that upon the lady. Now it was Salrana who regarded him contemptuously. The expression was so similar to the one on Ranelagh's face it unnerved him. She took Ranelagh's hand and carefully placed it on her bare breast. You have your life. I have mine. Even in your world of simplistic morality, I can live how I choose. And I choose this. I choose Ranelagh, my lover, my mistress. Ediard glared at Ranelagh, who returned a malicious smile. This is not over, he said. It was quite feeble, he knew, but he simply couldn't think what else to do. Why can't you see what she's become? Or perhaps she really can.
Lady! You won today,
Ranelagh told him in a mocking tone.
Show a little nobility. The water walker would.
Ediard barged out of the door, not bothering to conceal himself. Ediard returned to the culverted ziggurat and climbed the stairs without anyone noticing him. Even now he felt a shudder of trepidation that this would all turn out to be a fevered dream, that Christabel... that seeing her would shatter the illusion. Good old Ashwell optimism. Stupid. This is real now. I know that. When he reached the 10th floor, he drew up his courage and went to the room Christabel had claimed as her study. It was bare apart from the desk and chair. Even the curtains had been taken down as it slowly changed shape to the one she and Ediard had decided on. Bigger windows, brighter white lighting rosettes. He knew the walls were shifting inwards, so the lounge next door could be longer, even though the process was so slow, his eyes couldn't see the change. Just before he'd left,
Christabel had remarked on how the 10th floor was already different from the home she'd lived her whole life in. He humored her by agreeing because she was so excited and happy. Now she was bent over the desk, her quill pen scribbling furiously as always. Her beautiful face was wrinkled as she studied yet another thick ledger containing family accounts. 3 high piles of similar ledgers were propped up on the side of the desk. "My wife." "You look bored," he told her. Christabel started. Then she smiled at Ediard as he stood in the doorway. "I never even sensed you," she exclaimed. "Are you creeping up on me? And why are you here? What about the bandits? You couldn't have found them already." "No, we didn't. But I know who and where they are now. They'll just have to keep for another day. I wanted to be home with my beautiful wife." She hurried over with a big smile on her face and kissed him welcome. "That's so sweet. Finnerton will kill you, though. It was hugely important." Ediard put his arms round her, not wanting to let go. Ever. He took a look out of the window, across the Hortus to the fabulous living city beyond. "Others have tried." She frowned and poked him in the chest. "Are you all right? You seem tired." "No, I'm fine. It's just that today I realized there are some things you can never fix, no matter how hard you try." Christabel kissed him again. "But I know you. You'll just keep on trying. That's what makes you, you. That's why I love you." This concludes The Temporal Void. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalogue.